Hello once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me in the Bettors Box. This is BangTheBook.com's MLB betting podcast for May 8th. Happy to have you with me as we kick off another week here on Bang the Book Radio. This edition of the Bettors Box presented by DSI Sportsbook. If you head on over to DSI, use the promo code BTB Radio. That'll get you a $10 free bet just for signing up, and then an additional 50 to 100% deposit bonus based on the amount of your initial deposit. Our Monday, Tuesday, Thursday format, going strong here this week. We've got the Bettors Box and a couple of questions for the Monday mailbag today. Coming up on our Tuesday takeover show, we'll sit down and chat a little bit with our good buddy Kyle Hunter of SmarterSportsPicks.com. It should be good to get him back on the air. And then Thursday, another edition of the Bettors Box. Tons of great content going on over at BangTheBook.com. My picks and analysis article you can pick up every day. Also, my daily fantasy piece. I'm also writing golf, NASCAR, NHL game previews, some other stuff along the way. But we have all kinds of other things going on along with our matchup data. We've got some trends. We've got all sorts of things that can help you bang the books each and every day. So hopefully you're taking advantage of all that stuff. And don't forget about those three contests that we have going on at the website. All you have to do is sign up. No purchase necessary. Join up with the Daily Streaker, the monthly pick of the day, and then also the cash prizes for the top monthly win percentage, top ROI, and also number of units won. So three great opportunities over there for you. Again, no purchase necessary. And like I said, we don't spam your email or anything like that when you sign up for an account. We just want you to sign up, take advantage of all the great stuff that we have, and then get involved with those contests. All right, plenty of things to get to here on today's edition of the Bettors Box. I'll go beyond the box score, also go down the lines, run through my pick for Monday night, and then we've got a short Monday mailbag, and then I'll tell you what I'm looking ahead to here early on in the week before we reconvene once again on Thursday. I only have a couple of series I want to talk about for beyond the box score because I want to give you some more predictive data on today's show that you can incorporate a little bit more as we go forward as opposed to taking a look back. But I have to talk about this series between the Yankees and the Cubs. New York Yankees with a sweep at Wrigley Field. Cubs bullpen melted down in game one. Brett Anderson only got one out as the starting pitcher in game two, and the Yankees led wire to wire in that one. And then an 18-inning Sunday night baseball marathon for game three. The teams combined to go 3-for-28 with runners in scoring position in that game. Jake Arrieta, Kyle Hendricks, and John Lackey all had pinch hit appearances for the Cubs. Predictably, they all struck out. Only two pitchers batted for the Yankees in this game. Starter Luis Severino and then Chasen Shreve, who wound up getting the win in that game there for the Yankees. But the Cubs overall here in this series, just 4-for-25 with runners in scoring position. Ben Zobrist off to a very slow start, 230 average, 330 on base, 390 slugging. Addison Russell, who was a breakout candidate for a lot of people this year, 228, 291, 366 start. Not a whole lot from Kyle Schwarber at this point. I've talked a lot about the rotation issues for the Cubs. The question for me is this. When do we go from a slow start to genuine worry about the Chicago Cubs? Does that point even come? I mean, look, we know this is an extremely good team. Realistically speaking, the Cubs have nothing left to prove. They won the World Series. They ended that 108-year drought. So is there some carryover with that? Are we seeing a post-World Series hangover? And I don't necessarily mean from, you know, a complacency standpoint or a feeling of contentment, but simply that this team played a lot of baseball last year. You know, those starters were really pushed to the brink, not as much as the three main guys for the Indians in the playoffs with Kluber, Tomlin, and Trevor Bauer, but the Cubs had some guys that worked very, very deep into the season last year. A guy like Kyle Hendricks, not used to it. A guy like John Lester, now over that 2,000-inning threshold where we start to look for some, you know, some drop-off in performance. We know John Lackey's been around for a long time. Jake Arrieta has that velocity drop. So, you know, when it comes to the Cubs, I'm not really sure what to do at this point. You know, there's a ton of talent here. This is the most talented team in baseball. Arguably the most complete team in baseball when you look at the starting lineup, the depth in the rotation, and, of course, the depth in the bullpen. You've got a pretty creative manager in Joe Maddon who's very good at keeping players on an even keel. There's a lot to like about this Cubs team, but do we get to a point here where we start worrying about them? You know, I mean, the NL Central doesn't look very good so far. You've got a lot of teams that are mediocre with Milwaukee, Cincinnati, Pittsburgh. The Cardinals are off to a pretty slow start. So almost by default, the Cubs can win this division if they win, you know, 87, 88 games, something like that, which, you know, even a Cubs team that doesn't live up to its expectations should easily find a way to get to that point. But again, there are some major concerns here with this ball club. And you have to wonder, like I said, when do you go from that slow start to being worried? I mean, maybe some people are already worried. I've talked about the rotation concerns several times here on these shows and several times in write-ups, so I don't know if that counts as worry for me or not. But there's some hitters that are off to very slow starts, and you know, it's one of those things where you wonder, can the Cubs flip the switch? You know, if this is a team that's 30-30 in the middle of June, you know, can they flip that switch? Can they go, you know, 50-35 or whatever it is that they need to do, you know, in order to win this division, get home field, or at the very least, you know, not have to go on the road in the division series? You just have to wonder about that sort of thing. So I'm kind of curious to see how this whole thing plays out here with the Cubs as we go forward. But again, I just want to point you to some of these red flags that are out there. And of course, a very interesting series coming up with them here as they head to Colorado, because when you look at this series, Cubs bullpen, 3 2/3 of relief in game one, 8 2/3 in game two, 11 innings in game three of that series against the Yankees. They go to Colorado. Starters generally don't tend to work too deep into games. It's a tricky little series here for the Chicago Cubs. Looking at this one from a Yankees standpoint, though, how about the starting pitching that they got in this series? Michael Pineda, 6 innings, 3 hits, couple earned, a walk and 6 strikeouts. Jordan Montgomery, 6 2/3, 3 hits, 3 runs, 2 of them earned, walked 4, struck out 3. Luis Severino just continues to deal, 7 innings, 4 hits, 1 run, a walk, and 9 strikeouts. The Yankees are becoming a very compelling team to me. Now, I was higher on them coming into the season than a lot of people. They got off to a slow start. I started thinking to myself, was I a little bit too high on this team coming into the year? But now all of a sudden, they're just red hot. Aaron Judge is hitting everything in sight, and he's hitting it with authority. Starlin Castro swinging a good stick. Didi Gregorius is back now. You know, this is a Yankees team that's in a pretty good position. They've got a strong bullpen with Betances and Chapman at the back end. Also, Adam Morin and Tyler Clippard, guys that can work in those middle relief and setup roles if necessary. They've got minor league depth now in the system because of some of the trades that they made last year. The Yankees are a very interesting team as we push this thing forward. You know, the Orioles have overachieved a little bit if you look at base runs and also Pythagorean win-loss, which I'll do here in a couple of minutes. You know, the Red Sox are still a very good team. They'll be in the mix for a while. But this Yankees team has gotten off to a very good start. They've built themselves up a little bit of a cushion, and I'll be curious to see how they play this thing out, if they can keep going through the dog days of summer. And again, that's when you get a real big test. You know, because when I look at the Yankees, they've got some aging position players. You know, the influx of youth, like with Aaron Judge, and then if Greg Bird ever gets going, obviously helps. But Michael Pineda has a long injury history. CC Sabathia may not be able to sustain this very long. Masahiro Tanaka, you just never know with his ulnar collateral ligament damage. Can Jordan Montgomery keep going? Can Luis Severino stay at this pace? So the Yankees are a very interesting team for a lot of different reasons here as we move forward. And I'll be curious to see how they handle this early season success. One other series I wanted to mention here very, very quickly. The Boston Red Sox took 2 out of 3 from the Minnesota Twins. That's not stunning at all. But I wanted to point you to a couple things that happened in the last two games of this series. Minnesota allowed 28 runs in the last two games of this series, 17-11. Gave up a 10 spot in the ninth inning of Sunday's game. Cracks are starting to show up in the bullpen here. Irvin Santana saw some regression on Sunday. The reason I bring this up is because I've talked about the Twins and their ability to turn batted balls into outs. That seems like it's regressing here in a pretty big way. And like I talked about last week, Miguel Sano is the only hitter in this lineup that I'd be concerned with as an opposing team. So I feel like the Twins going to start to see a reversal of fortunes here. I think they're very fortunate to be off to a 500 start. I think we probably see this team, you know, once we hit that, you know, that 60 game marker. So this is probably a team that I would say, you know, is 28-32 or 27-33, something like that. They start to regress a little bit here over these next 30 or so games would be my thought. But again, you know, we'll have to see how that plays out. And if they can keep getting some timely hits, because they have gotten a lot of those here early on. But I just don't like this pitching staff at all. They've already sent down Kyle Gibson. There's not a whole lot to like about this team from a pitching standpoint. But as I said, I wanted to give some more predictive data here on today's show, as opposed to a look beyond the box score, a look back at what we saw. I want to talk about base runs. Now, I've talked about this before. I'll go ahead and give you another explanation here. But base runs is a standings metric that's used over at FanGraphs. It is context neutral. So it spits out runs scored and runs against based solely on outcomes, not on clustered outcomes. I talk about this. I wrote about this today in my picks analysis piece. Really, when you boil it all down, baseball is simply a game about sequencing. Are you getting outs with men on base? Are you getting hits with men on base? That's pretty much how it goes. Even though we've got such a homer happy environment now in Major League Baseball, where you know teams can get some of those multi-run dingers and have a bad day with runners in scoring position but still wind up winning the game, it's still about getting outs in those high leverage situations. So what base runs does is it's a context neutral environment. So again, as I've used this example before, single, home run, strikeout, flyout is 3 runs. Home run, single, strikeout, flyout is 1 run. All the same outcomes, they were just ordered differently. So that's what base runs does. It simply takes the outcomes and then spits out an expected runs per game and runs allowed per game. So you can see some of these areas where teams have gotten a little bit lucky on both sides of the coin, where teams have gotten lucky to get out of those high leverage situations, where teams have gotten lucky to get hits in those high leverage situations, and then obviously the inverse of that, where teams may have a bad BABIP against with runners in scoring position and not be getting a whole lot of those hits in a favorable fashion. So a few teams here that kind of stand out a little bit on the base run spectrum. The first is the Oakland Athletics. The Oakland Athletics right now are minus 36 in run differential. However, if you look at base runs, they should be exactly even. So they should be a 500 team. They're basically around a 500 team. But their Pythagorean win-loss is much different than their base runs record. According to base runs here, should have 4.19 runs per game. They're only scoring 3.87 runs per game. Should be allowing 4.19 runs per game. They're giving up over 5 runs per game as a team. So it all depends on what you want to believe here. Pythagorean win-loss says that I believe they should be 12-19, I think, when I looked earlier. But base runs said that they should be a 500 team. So which do you want to believe? Which one do you want to put the most stake in? Now, I'll say this. There are a couple of things about Oakland that do stand out here. The first, they hit a lot of home runs. They generally tend to hit some solo home runs. Chris Davis has good power. Ryan Healy's power is coming around a little bit now. So, you know, in that respect, they're probably going to leave a lot of guys on base. So maybe they should be a little bit lower than their projected runs per game. Also, on the defensive side, as I said, they're giving up over 5 runs per game. Big reason why is because they are terrible defensively. They are bad on the infield, and they are very bad in the outfield. So that definitely has an impact in terms of allowing runs. As I said, it should be 4.19 runs per game. It's over 5. So at that point, you try to quantify how much does this bad defense hurt this Oakland team. And truthfully, I think this is a tough one to gauge. I think it's a tough one to figure out because Oakland is a team that has a pretty good bullpen, should be able to win some of those close games late, which is what they've done given their run differential and what their actual record is. And also, you know, they have some of these things where overall they're probably going to be one of those outliers from a sequencing standpoint because they hit for a lot of power, they don't construct a whole lot of innings, and they have bad defense. Bad defense makes it hard to get outs in high leverage situations, especially when you have a starting rotation that's on the lower end of the strikeout spectrum. So Oakland here, you know, maybe a team that defies the base runs logic a little bit throughout the season. We'll stay out there in the American League West, the Texas Rangers. They are minus 5 in run differential right now, but according to base runs, should be minus 17. 4.44 runs per game is their actual number. Their base runs number should be about 4.07 runs per game. So the Rangers' offense overachieving a little bit per the numbers. You've got Cole Hamels out now. You've got a pretty bad bullpen. You've got a bad back end of the starting rotation. Andrew Kashner's a guy I'll talk about here in a minute. We all know about Martin Perez. Basically, Yu Darvish and a collection of stiffs for this Texas Rangers rotation. So if the offense regresses, as base runs is suggesting, this is a team that could get even worse, and they're already bad enough. So again, we saw a lot of regression red flags for the Rangers last year that never came to fruition until they got swept in the division series. Seems like this year, you know, we're seeing some of that regression come to light here, and there could be even more of it on the way. The Boston Red Sox have a couple of interesting outliers here. Their actual runs per game, 4.45. Projected runs per game, 4.6. Runs allowed per game, 3.90. Projected runs allowed per game, 4.12. So I wonder if maybe we start to see a little bit of a run on overs for the Red Sox. Underachieving a little bit offensively, overachieving a little bit defensively from a run prevention standpoint. This could be a team where we start to see some of those high-scoring games. And again, keep in mind here, they just scored 28 runs over the last two games. So maybe some of that regression already starting to come through. The St. Louis Cardinals, their offense got going a little bit here in Atlanta over the weekend. Actual runs per game, 4.37. Projected runs per game, 4.92. Now again, this Cardinals team had the fifth lowest batting average on balls in play with runners in scoring position when I talked on last Thursday's show. They raised that average 10 points in that series against the Braves. So they had some better fortunes with runners in scoring position, scored some more runs. Looks like that could be a trend here going forward for the Cardinals. So you may want to look at some team total overs, maybe some full game overs. And then I'll talk about this here in the down the line segment in a minute. But there are some people out there that really don't like the St. Louis Cardinals this year. So there could be some side value. Now, that being said, while they look like they've got some offensive gains coming, 4.2 runs against per game, projected runs against per game, 4.57. They've got some starting pitchers that are carrying some very high left on base percentages, specifically Mike Leake and Michael Wacha. If those start to regress a little bit, as they probably should, the Cardinals may start to give up some more runs as well. I would counter to that and say the Cardinals' bullpen hasn't been very good. I think it's better than it's performed thus far, so maybe they get a little bit more favorable outcomes with that. But again, the Cardinals looking like a team that should be playing some more high-scoring games as we go forward here. And again, it makes sense with two of their primary starters carrying some very high left-on-base percentages. The Pittsburgh Pirates offense, they've been a little bit unlucky. 3.77 runs per game, projected for 4.04 runs per game. So that's one of those situations where, you know, the Pirates have gotten off to a really bad start offensively. They have some suspension problems. They have some injury problems. So, you know, we'll just have to see if we're able to right the ship here and get things turned around a little bit. A few other offenses that I want to mention, or a couple of other run metrics I want to mention here from a base run standpoint. The New York Mets. The New York Mets have scored over 5 runs per game so far this year, 5.07 runs per game. But if you look at base runs, they're projected to have just 4.49 runs per game. So the Mets offense overachieving in a big way. No Yoenis Cespedes right now. Michael Conforto's hitting the cover off the ball. But it looks like the Mets getting some very fortunate sequencing luck here so far. So they may be a team that you want to look to fade a little bit here in the coming weeks. Maybe look at some team total unders when they're playing some good pitchers, stuff like that. But their offense is overachieving in a pretty significant manner. Houston Astros here. 3.75 runs against per game. Projected to 4.22 runs against per game. So the Astros getting a little bit fortunate here in terms of what's going on with them. Again, you know, they've got a good defensive team. They've got a great bullpen. So there can be some outliers here to this. You know, base runs is a context-neutral environment, so there is some validity in terms of predictive value. However, you have to start applying the context. You have to look at it and say, okay, you know, like Oakland, for example. Yeah, they should be allowing fewer runs per game, but they suck defensively. So that's going to happen. You know, Houston should be allowing more runs per game, but they've got a very good bullpen, very good defensive team. So maybe they can sustain this a little bit. But again, the reason I highlighted the teams and the stats that I did is because they are big enough outliers to the point where regression should come no matter what. Yeah, maybe the Astros give up 4 runs per game or 3.9 runs per game, and they're projected at 4.25. So they still overachieve a little bit, but there's still some margin for regression there. So I think that's something you want to keep in mind as we go forward a little bit. One more team here, the Detroit Tigers. I talked about this already, that they're one of the biggest outliers in terms of batted ball success with runners in scoring position. I think they're third in BABIP in those high leverage opportunities. 5 runs per game for them. but projected to 4.61 runs. So again, the Tigers getting a little bit fortunate there, having some good batted ball luck. Seems like all of it's coming against the Indians, to be honest with you. But they are a team where you look at them and you expect to see some drop off from them. I think that is something that happens relatively quickly here and possibly on this road trip, which I'll talk about a little bit later in the show. All right, so we'll go down the lines here, talk about some line moves that we have seen. And again, for that previous segment that I just did, you may want to listen to it twice to make sure that you do pick up on some of the numbers that I've put in there. But over at FanGraphs, you go to the standings page. Base runs is going to be a tab up top. You can look at this stuff all for yourself. And then if you need help interpreting the data, just please feel free to reach out on Twitter at Skating Tripods. All right, so some line moves that we saw here over the weekend. Friday, this wasn't a line move, but I'm surprised we didn't see money come in on Michael Pineda in that Yankees versus Cubs matchup. I really expected to see some. Pineda's been a guy that, you know, the analytics community has been backing in the betting market for a while now. He's actually living up to that performance this season, but then we didn't see money come in on him on Friday. I was kind of surprised with that. We saw a fade of Miguel Gonzalez against Wade Miley, White Sox and Orioles. Miley actually took a couple of line drives off of his body and had to leave that game early. The Orioles won that one 4-0. That was kind of a pick-your-regression poison because Gonzalez definitely in line for some. Miley's certainly in line for some as well. The market spoke, decided to fade the White Sox, which isn't a big surprise. There weren't a whole lot of believers in the White Sox coming into the season. And with Miley, he's generating swings and misses. And I think that there's a sentiment out there where when you see that big ERA to xFIP regression, you know, if it's a high strikeout rate, I think people are a little bit more cautious in terms of picking against that. That was the case there with Miley in that one. Flip favorite in the game between the Cardinals and the Braves, Lance Lynn, Mike Foltynewicz in that one. Again, this was a theme that we saw throughout the weekend of people fading the Cardinals against the Braves. I don't know if it's love for the Braves. I don't know if it's a lack of love for the Cardinals. But, you know, I'm kind of surprised because if you look at some of the underlying metrics for the Cardinals, as I just did with some of their base runs numbers and also their BABIP and high leverage spots, this is a team that should be better than it is. So I was a little bit surprised to see the Cardinals get faded actually in all three games of that series there against the Braves. Saw some Danny Salazar money come in against Jason Hamill. The Indians lost that game on Friday night. I don't know if that was a buy of Salazar. I don't know if that was a fade of Kansas City. Either one would make some sense to me. But the Indians are just not hitting right now. They're very lucky to be 3-3 on this road trip here so far. Oakland went from plus 120 to minus 125, lost in that one. One quick note I do want to mention here. We saw two teams, Texas and Detroit, go west. Texas went up to Seattle. Detroit went out to Oakland. Both of those teams won the first game on Friday night and then lost the next two. That may be an angle that you can look to play a little bit if you want to here in some of these series as we go forward. I did talk about Oakland series price on Thursday's show. I'm glad that one came through for us. Money came in against Dallas Keuchel, against the Houston Astros. It was something that happened twice in their series against the Angels here this weekend. I don't really get fading Dallas Keuchel at this point. I mean, if you look at the peripherals, they're phenomenal. If you look at his pitching heat maps where he's locating his pitches, everything is down in the zone again. This is 2015 Dallas Keuchel. This is Cy Young Award winner Dallas Keuchel. He's commanding the ball so well right now. It's ill-advised to go against him. I mean, to an extent, I get it. I didn't get it on Friday night. But the Astros, you know, high perception of them. Keuchel's been really, really strong. People kind of looking back and sort of thinking 2015 was the outlier. But he just looks great right now. And I wouldn't look to step in front of him. Saw some money coming on Yu Darvish to fade Yovani Gallardo. That's not a big surprise. Also some money on Kenta Maeda and the Dodgers to fade the Padres. Once again, no surprises. Julius Chacin was the starter there for San Diego. Saturday, we saw a fade of Marco Estrada. Again, not a surprise. The Marco Estrada fade is back. People have been fading Marco Estrada for like the last 4 years. He's defied a lot of odds in that respect by carrying some low BABIPs. This year just doesn't seem to be as crisp. I don't know if it's the ongoing back injuries. I'm not sure. But I think we see Estrada faded probably with regularity here throughout the season. Saw a move on Vince Velasquez in the Phillies against A.J. Cole and the Nationals. Nationals won this game big. Just one thing I want to remind you about here. This isn't always a pitcher fade with why we're seeing money move. It's all about the timing of the line moves. A lot of times you get the overnight moves, which are about the pitchers, but you'll see some moves during the day when lineups come out, And the Nationals, of course, were in a situation, no Bryce Harper throughout the weekend. So, you know, that's going to adjust the Nationals lineup a little bit. But again, they're scoring over 6 runs per game anyway. So, you know, we'll just see how their line moves play out as we go forward. Saw a Giants fade with Ty Block up against Amir Garrett and the Reds. That's not a surprise. Block, from a lot of the underlying metrics, a guy that you really don't want to trust at this point. We saw money come in on Julio Teheran. As I mentioned, the Cardinals were faded in all 3 games of that series. I think Julio Teheran is hurt. I talked about this in my picks analysis piece. I talked about this even when I backed him against Robert Gesellman, on that game against the Mets. Teheran has some really concerning underlying stats here. The walk rate is up. The zone percentage is way down. The velocity is down. I will not be touching Julio Teheran anytime soon. He needs to prove to me that he's healthy, and I just don't know if that's the case right now. Saw a huge Tyler Anderson move for the Rockies-Diamondbacks game. Anderson was highly respected coming into the year. A lot of people rated him very, very well, rated the Rockies very well. This move wasn't a surprise at all. It's actually about a 30-cent line move. So the market really got caught with a bad number there on Patrick Corbin. I talked about the Astros fade on Friday already. There was also one on Saturday. And this was a buy on J.C. Ramirez. I dug into the numbers with J.C. Ramirez in my picks analysis piece on Saturday. He's been very, very good. He's throwing with premium velocity as a starter, heavy, heavy slider usage. The profile is working for him right now. I don't know how sustainable it is long term. I think he's a massive injury risk with the velocity and the heavy slider usage. But this is a guy where you probably will see some line moves on him. The one thing that's curious about this one, and Houston opened about minus 130 and closed the minus 110 range, is that early on in the year, in April, we saw the Astros get bought every damn day. Every day there was sharp money coming in on the Astros. Now we're sort of seeing the inverse of that here, where we're seeing Astros prices maybe a little bit higher as odds makers have adjusted, and now the market looking to come in against them. And maybe it was just this series, maybe it was just the Angels, and people actually came in on the Astros on Sunday. But it's interesting to see the up and down nature of things out there in the betting market. You know, when one team looks like they're undervalued, somebody comes in, hits them, then it looks like they're overvalued, you come in and play the other side. It's just what it is. You know, it's like trading stocks or equities or anything like that. You know, you just look for those buy points that are out there, whether it's on pitchers, whether it's on teams. And that's why I like to look down the lines and like to study the markets here to see if I can find some of these things to where we can pick up on them and hopefully take advantage of them before a lot of people pile in. One quick note about Sundays. Keep in mind, a lot of these moves on Sundays can be lineup driven. Once those lineups come out, guys are sitting, guys aren't playing. You know, there's different strange sorts of lineup constructions. You might have some really shitty hitter batting second. Managers, you know, just do this. It happens. You know, day games after night games, guys go out, guys come to the ballpark hungover. Managers get it. A lot of them played. A lot of them probably had those same situations when they were playing. So we get some weird lineups on Sundays. But we did see some moves here that were of note. Zach Davies took on some money here for the Brewers against the Pirates. It's about the third straight start that Davies has been steamed. A guy that was very good last year. People had high hopes for him this season. He's starting to turn it around a little bit. So he's taking on some money here. And, of course, Pittsburgh's offense just not very good. Saw that Michael Wacha fade. I talked about this already. People out there that don't really like the Cardinals, I'm not selling my Cardinals stock. I think they have some gains to make offensively. And I like what Michael Wacha has done here so far. So I was a little bit surprised to see that move. Saw a move on Chris Sale. That was a fade of Irvin Santana. Irvin Santana carrying a low BABIP and a high left on base rate. Boston, good lineup. Not a big surprise to see that move. But Chris Sale wasn't very sharp in that game. He did strike out 10. We gave up 4 runs on 4 hits. I think he walked 4 as well. I talked about Chris Sale on that Stealing Signs podcast that I did where he's elite, but he's not going to carry numbers like this throughout the season. So I think that there's some opportunities to maybe play some opposing team totals if you get a good lineup matchup there. I wouldn't think that the Twins would be, but you know, they did a decent job there against Sale, who they've seen a lot, of course, being a former White Sox hurler. So I don't know. We'll have to see how that all plays out. But I think we continue to see that Irvin Santana fade, especially when he takes on good lineups. I was pretty surprised to see money come in on the Indians and Mike Clevinger against the Kansas City Royals and Danny Duffy. The Indians have not hit left-handed pitching all year long. Didn't again yesterday, but the Royals are just so bad. I think we keep seeing money come in against the Royals as we go forward. Money came in on Mike Fiers and the Astros against Matt Shoemaker and the Angels. I don't like Mike Fiers, but he has a very, very high home run to fly ball rate. It's unsustainably high at that. So that was probably the point in that move. But you know, some of these Astros moves, very strange. It's a daily move one way or another. And I'm just not quite sure where they're going to be coming from. The Oakland A's opened a plus 110 dog. They closed a minus 130 favorite. They were a winner, took the series there over the Detroit Tigers. Saw money come in against Andrew Cashner and the Texas Rangers. Cashner was okay in that start, but his peripherals are brutal. Money will keep coming in against Andrew Cashner. So if Cashner pitches later in the week here, look to jump on that overnight line because you should get some line value there with that. Few moves coming in here on Monday. Yet another Cardinals fade. Marlins buy. Sharp players like the Marlins, don't like the Cardinals. Not a big surprise. We may see Marlins money come in every game of this series. Slight Yankees fade with the 18-inning game. Look, I get it. You know, it's an 18-inning game. You got into Cincinnati very, very late, but Masahiro Tanaka's got a good matchup here against the Reds. Rookie Davis does not against the Yankees. But we saw Rookie Davis get steamed into a favorite against the Pirates in his last start, so who knows. Kendall Graveman and the A's getting faded here. Again, Angels taking on money. I don't get it. I don't like the Angels, but somebody out there does, and we'll see if they're smarter than I am. So some Dodgers money hit the board here. They take on the Pirates and Trevor Williams. Trevor Williams getting a spot start. Dodgers sending out Alex Wood for this one. Dodgers open like minus 185, and they're up into the 200 range now. So chalk move, but we sometimes get those. All right, so let's look here at Monday's play of the night. This one could not have worked out better, honestly. We've got the Colorado Rockies over the Chicago Cubs. I've talked about my desire to fade Jake Arrieta. Good spot to do that here today. Cubs play 18 innings. Bullpen threw a ton here over the weekend. They threw over 20 innings, or almost 20 innings in that series against the Yankees. Starters don't last very long in Colorado. Jake Arrieta, you know, right now lots of swings and misses in the zone. That velocity is down. Pitches do different things in Colorado. They don't spin the same way. You know, you have different resistance against the baseball. Arrieta is going to throw some hangers in this game, I think. So I like the Rockies here in this spot. Another thing, too, and this isn't really anything that I can quantify, but the Rockies are vying for legitimacy. You know, I mean, people were buying into them before the season. I was a skeptic. I remain a skeptic. But they're vying to be a legitimate team. And this is a big series for them. This series doesn't mean nearly as much to the Cubs. I don't know what it means to the Cubs. But to the Rockies, who are playing very well, you know, this is a series where they want to showcase themselves. Maybe they get a few bigger crowds out there at Coors Field. This is something that they want to play well in. And I think that there's something to that. You know, I like I said, I can't quantify it. So it's kind of a gray area for me as an analytics-based guy. But I think there's something to it, and I'll be curious to see how Colorado comes out and plays in this series. Antonio Senzatella is a guy that I don't love, as I talked about already, but first time seeing the Cubs, tired Cubs lineup. Anthony Rizzo probably won't play today after he took that pitch off the forearm, just as a precautionary measure. I want to say this, too. So I like the Rockies tonight. I may like the Rockies even more tomorrow night. Eno Saris wrote an article over at FanGraphs here over the weekend about some sleep studies in Colorado. He had some very good analysis that he posted there. It's a great article. I believe I retweeted it on my timeline at Skating Tripods. Check it out if you can. So the Cubs get in very, very early to Denver here this morning, you know, probably 5 a.m. local time, something like that. By the time they actually got to the airport, got their flight out, you know, it's a couple-hour flight, all that type of thing. The article was about sleeping and sleeping habits and sleeping patterns in Colorado and how there's a pretty big learning curve to doing that as well. And, you know, the Cubs are going to come in tired. It was a very emotional series against the Yankees. Tomorrow's game could be even worse for them. You got John Lackey going up against Kyle Freeland. You know my thoughts on Kyle Freeland. You know I want to fade Kyle Freeland as much as I possibly can. But tomorrow looks like a spot to back the Rockies. So I think we've got two good places to back the Rockies here. Should be an underdog in both of them. I think we at least get one of them, so we should turn a profit there. But I wouldn't be shocked at all if we get both of them with the situation here tonight and the situation that will develop for tomorrow. All right, so the Monday mailbag here, I've got three short questions. One of them wasn't even really directed as a Monday mailbag question, but I'm going to throw it out here anyway. The first is from our good buddy at MikeyDFS86 on Twitter, asking MLB game, player game props. Is it still a soft market, or has the emergence of daily fantasy caused the books to adjust? Very interesting question here. I would think it's still a soft market because I don't want to say it's gimmicky because that makes it sound bad, but it just doesn't get a big handle. It's something that odds makers throw up to induce some more action, but I don't think these are particularly sharp lines. I mean, when you think about it, player game props, you're talking about a sample size of 4, maybe 5 plate appearances. There is a significant amount of variance in something like that. You know, I don't believe in batter versus pitcher stats. I don't believe in pitcher versus team stats. They're just not significant enough for me. So there's a lot of variance in these player props. And because of that, I don't think that they're a great investment just because anything can happen. But I imagine it is still a soft market in the sense that it's not efficient. So if you feel like you've got an edge, by all means, go ahead and play it. I don't think that daily fantasy really has too much of an impact in terms of what's going on with the game props. Maybe there are stronger models out there, but, you know, still. I mean, it's just such a high variance market that there's really no way to make it more efficient. But speaking of soft markets, what I do want to mention here, first inning score, yes or no, seems to be a pretty soft market here. Get a lot of plus money prices out there on those. There's so much split data available nowadays, more power-based guys at the tops of lineups that we've seen in past seasons. That's a soft market that I would like to look more into here as we go throughout the season, is to see if there are some things out there with those first inning lines that you can look to take advantage of. Had a question from a buddy of mine. He was just reaching out to some of us there on Indians Twitter, asking about a good quantifiable list of ballpark factors for the long term so that ESPN only lists a single season. On the team pages over at Baseball Reference, there's multi-year park factor. I don't know if it's 5 or 7 years. There's a multi-year park factor over there. And then if you go to the glossary section under the guts heading, there's park factors over there at FanGraphs. So for those that do want to look at park factor stuff, whether it's for daily fantasy or for betting purposes, you can get that over there. One other question here from at @APass_SR on Twitter. How do you load money onto DSI? I have two recommendations. The first would be Bitcoin. You know, sign up with an account over at Coinbase or something like that. There are a lot of Bitcoin sites out there. You know, because a lot of sports books are going toward Bitcoin for withdrawals now. It's just easier, you know, with some of the crackdowns in terms of print payment processors and all that type of thing, with funneling money offshore to some of these sports betting accounts. A lot of sports books now are trying to push their clients toward Bitcoin withdrawals. So it only makes sense to go in there, buy some Bitcoin, deposit with that. That's the way that I would go about doing it if I was you. But another option, as always, you can go with the prepaid credit card. You know, go get your fuel perks from whatever grocery store chain you've got. Get a prepaid Visa, prepaid MasterCard, pay that $5 service charge or whatever it is, and just use that. You know, if you don't want to throw your credit card information out there, and I can certainly understand that. But Bitcoin is very user-friendly. You just link your bank account straight to your Bitcoin account. You know, or you can, I don't know, you can probably buy using the prepaid credit card as well, or your own credit card if you want to. That's what I would go with. I'd go the prepaid route or the Bitcoin route. Probably the two safest methods for you there. And then, like I said, a lot of books are pushing toward Bitcoin withdrawals. So if you just want to eliminate that middle step and just go ahead and set up a Bitcoin account, that'd probably be the way that I would recommend doing it. But, you know, we'll see how things go, you know, in terms of Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. And it's shooting through the roof right now from a price standpoint. So people that invested early when it was about $500 per Bitcoin, you know, those are some people that have turned over some nice gains there. So I understand that there's some uncertainty about that. A lot of people not too familiar with it, not too comfortable with it. But, you know, you've got two options there. One is a more traditional option. One is a little bit more of a present day option with Bitcoin. But that's exactly what I would look to do there, to sign up for that account at DSI and then also at any other sportsbook. So what am I looking at here for the week ahead? Well, that Cubs-Rockies series. It's amazing how things work out. Two guys I want to fade pitching in spots where I want to back them. You've got Jake Arrieta going up against Antonio Sensatella tonight, John Lackey and Kyle Freeland tomorrow, Kyle Hendricks and Herman Marquez coming up on Wednesday. Marquez has not pitched well at all, so I'll be curious to see what that line looks like, especially if the Cubs are looking to avoid a sweep, as I think is certainly possible. But like I said, I want to look to fade Sensatella and Freeland, but I don't like Arrieta and Lackey either. So An interesting series there. I'll be watching that one closely. Washington and Baltimore play two in Baltimore, then two in Washington. The Orioles, one of the biggest overachievers in baseball right now based on Pythagorean win-loss and base runs. Zach Britton is hurt again. Some interesting pitching matchups here in this series, though. Gio Gonzalez, Kevin Gausman on Monday. Max Scherzer, Yubaldo Jimenez on Tuesday. Then as we flip to Washington, you've got Wade Miley, Steven Strasburg on Wednesday. Dylan Bundy, Jacob Turner on Thursday. A few regression candidates in this series for Baltimore with Miley and Bundy both in Washington. So they'll face one less hitter. Gausman, I just don't know what to expect from him. But I know some people reaching out on Twitter here today saying they like the Nationals and Gio Gonzalez. I can't fault you for that one. Baltimore's offense is underachieving a little bit, but Washington's scoring 6 runs per game. I don't know about the sustainability of that. So there's a lot to watch here in this series, especially because Baltimore better in close games. Washington's bullpen has not been good. This closer carousel for Dusty Baker has been a bit of a disaster. Baltimore's got good depth even without Britton. So maybe some live betting opportunities in this series as well. Detroit and Arizona, quick little two-gamer in this one. You've got Justin Verlander, Robbie Ray on Tuesday night. Matt Boyd, Zach Godley on Wednesday night. And then the Tigers go back to California for a 4-game set against the Angels on Thursday. So from Oakland to the Phoenix area to Anaheim. A tricky little spot here for Detroit, I think. Both of these teams really overachieving heavily in terms of batting average on balls in play with runners in scoring position. So I'm curious. We may get a total of 10 in that game on Wednesday between Boyd and Godley. I think Verlander and Ray, probably a 9 coming up here on Tuesday night. Maybe an 8.5 because both of those guys can miss some bats. But an interesting little series there. You know, people are really buying Colorado, buying the sustainability of Colorado. You don't hear a whole lot of talk about Arizona in the start that they're off to. So I'm kind of going to watch that a little bit here and see if I get some opportunities to play on or against the Diamondbacks in the coming days. As I mentioned at the top of the show there, our Tuesday Takeover program tomorrow will have Kyle Hunter of SmarterSportsPicks.com. Going to record that today. Got a few good topics for him, so that should be a whole lot of fun. Keep going over to BangTheBook.com. Check out everything that we have, including my daily analysis article. So that will do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And remember that you will never strike out when you're in the Bettors Box.